is The End User, episode 121 for Tuesday, January 29th. They made it not ridiculous. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I'm your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I am Futurist Prime, Taylor Marr.
Ah, good. I'm glad you're sticking with that. We finally have found a title for you.
Well, until I change it. I mean, I am, after all, a futurist.
It's true. You will, without notice, change it at any point in time. I think that's reasonable.
Well, at any point in the future.
Yeah, not at any point in the past. You can't. I suppose you could retroactively go back into the podcast and edit a new name in, but that...
I could, but I won't.
Yeah, definitely not. So it's been kind of a light week of news. I feel like we've had a lot of drama in the tech industry, which is a little uninteresting from the end user perspective, don't you think?
Yeah, we don't like to report on drama. We like to report on tech news.
That's right. We like to see devices and innovation happening. And I think the whole industry, and I know I've said this every year that we've done the podcast, but I think the whole industry goes into this CES hangover mode where nothing really happens for a couple weeks. In fact, I think we've even named a show after it at some point.
That sounds familiar. I don't even know. I have this massive CES hangover.
Well, drink some water and recover from it, and let's get into our news.
Okay.
So this is an interesting headline, and All Things D got it right, and they were about the only one. Unlocking phones without carrier permission becomes illegal on Saturday, and that was this past Saturday. So it is currently illegal in the United States if you're on contract to unlock your phone without your carrier's permission. Now, most of the carriers here in the U.S. are pretty permissive about you unlocking your phone, though.
Yeah, they've been becoming more permissive over the last 2 years or so. And part of that is just voluntary, and part of it has to do with laws that have been passed that say, under certain conditions, they are required to unlock your cell phone so that you can use it with somebody else. But unlocking is only part of the problem. I mean, if you have a Verizon phone of any kind, you still can't unlock it and take it to AT&T.
Yeah, even with LTE, which uses a SIM card that previous Verizon phones did not, you can't just take this thing over to AT&T. They don't have the right bands of LTE, and it's going to be not working. So, yeah, we've got bigger problems than this, I think.
Right.
Although it just kind of grinds me the wrong way, right? It's like I bought this and I should be able to unlock it. And I guess the problem with that is that, well, if you buy a subsidized phone, you really haven't bought the phone, have you?
Well, no, you still did buy the phone. You just have to pay for it over the course of your contract.
Right. That's what I mean. Well, once your contract is up, then you can do whatever you want with it. You can unlock it. You can do whatever you want. So as it stands, if you buy a phone that's subsidized, you really haven't bought it until your contract's up.
Yeah, that is definitely true. You haven't completely paid for the phone until that contract is up. Or, I mean, even if you did break your contract early, they still make you pay for it. You have to pay the early termination fee.
Right. And as is the case with most carriers here in the United States, most of the time, if you just call them, they will unlock it.
That's right. Even if you're still on contract.
Yeah, they will, right. Even if you're still on contract, if you just call them, they will SIM unlock it for you. But what they won't do is like jailbreak it for you or something like that.
And Rennie, our listener from Australia, is telling us that in Australia, his carrier did the same thing for him.
Yeah, definitely so. So I don't know. There's some difference in law and what the carriers are actually doing here. And I wonder if over time the carriers will start to restrict this a little bit now that the law is in place and at their advantage. So it'll be interesting to see how they react to this and whether or not they start to tighten the restrictions. Now, as with anything that happens on the internet, there is currently a White House petition asking the Congress to rescind this decision. So I guess there's that.
There's that. Yeah, my main concern is also about what the carriers are going to do in response to this. Now that they've got this new, stricter law, are they going to continue to be as lenient as they have been? But, I mean, if you were to, let's say, jailbreak your iPhone and unlock it and then take it from AT&T to T-Mobile, T-Mobile's not going to stop you from doing that. And probably no one's going to come knock down your door. We're not going to condone illegal contivity on this podcast, but yeah, you'll probably be okay.
Yeah, and T-Mobile has, I'm pretty sure we talked about this when it happened, but they're encouraging you to bring your own phone, as they call it. So they've got plans in which you can bring your own device or buy a new device off contract and use it up front, and you get a discount on the plan. And that's really how it should be, right?
That is how it should be, although I wonder what T-Mobile will be saying once they have actual on-contract iPhones on their network, which will be in a few months.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? We will find out soon enough.
We will.
All right, well, enough U.S.-centric stuff. Let's talk a little bit about this new product called, well, it's not really new, but Twitter has a product called Vine.
Oh, yeah, good. I love talking about iPhone-centric stuff.
Yeah, I guess it is iPhone-centric, right?
It's only for iPhone right now.
Yeah, iPhone and iPod Touch. There's not even an Android client.
Right. So Vine is this app that is basically Twitter, but you necessarily have to upload 6-second videos along with your tweet.
So it's like putting a restriction of 140 characters, but for video, and that restriction is 6 seconds.
Yeah, and I don't really get that. I mean, the 140 characters thing came from something. Remember, this was before smartphones, or before popular smartphones. And so the 140 characters was a way to contain all tweets within a single text message.
Right. So, yeah. So I guess in that idea, you could text all of your tweets that you wanted to send out. And this doesn't really apply here. Although, haven't we moved on from texting our tweets?
Most of us have, although I think that it is an option that should remain integral to Twitter. And I remember when Twitter started, people would receive all of their tweets via text message, too. That was the main thing.
So with Vine, I don't really understand this. So, I mean, I understand what it does. I don't understand why I'd want to use it, although I guess Twitter was like that at first as well.
It was, and it still is to the majority of people in the world.
Yeah, the big thing about Twitter was that Facebook was my private social network, and Twitter is my public social network. And guess what? I can already post videos to Twitter. I don't understand how Vine fits into this. I guess it's just an easier way to do so. And
your videos were too long, Chris. That's what Twitter is telling me. Your videos were just way too long.
They were way too long.
I could never get to the end of it. I mean, actually, honestly, I cannot remember you ever posting a video to Twitter.
What are you going to do with 6 seconds?
Have you ever posted a video to Twitter? Have you ever actually done it?
I feel like I must have. We did that one episode of The End User with video a while back, and I feel like I must have posted that to Twitter, although it was on archive.org.
That doesn't count.
Doesn't count?
No.
And that was like an hour and 20 minutes. I feel like that is that is definitely too long for Twitter.
Can I watch it from within my Twitter app?
No, you'd have to go out to archive.
Doesn't count.
So I don't know. I think this is going to be a flash in the pan. I think this is going to happen, and we're all going to talk about it for a little while. And then 3 months from now, we're not going to see anything change.
You're probably right about that. However, if you want to see what the deal is with Vine, and you don't have an iPhone or an iPod Touch, you can go check out what people are posting at vinepeak.com.
Right, so this guy used the Vine API to make a website, is that right?
Right, it's just sort of a gallery of Vine videos, and they kind of fly by you.
Now, there's been some controversy over posting porn to Vine, and you know, I feel like anytime something like this comes along, the sexting question comes up, and most people don't actually do that. And people blow it out of proportion, and there's really not much to talk about. But people make a big deal about it, like we were saying earlier, you know, the drama. And then Twitter has to respond and do something about, you know, this supposed issue on Vine, and it's really not an issue. What do you think of that?
I think that there is a lot of pornography, intentional and otherwise, that is already on Twitter. And a lot has been written about that, but nobody's made such a big deal out of it. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that it's been such a slow news week in the tech world, and something to do with the fact that video was more provocative. And
Definitely so. I could agree with that. I think this is something that's going to happen, and a lot of people are going to think it's a big deal, and then we're not going to see it in 3 months. So I just, you know, we almost didn't even talk about this aspect of it because I just think it's not going to be an issue at all.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Now, that said, you want to look at these companies and say, okay, well, you know, this is kind of actually a problem, and maybe there's some kind of smart filtering you could do, but I don't think in the long run it's actually going to be a problem for anybody. And like you said, there's already a lot of that floating around on Twitter, and Tumblr is a hotbed for this kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole internet is.
Yeah, that's true.
What made anyone think this would be different?
That's true. All right, so enough of the talking about the product that's not even going to exist in 3 months. I don't know. Maybe I'll eat my words on that. I would really like to eat my words on that, but that's how I think it's going to go.
I already set the timer for 3 months.
Okay. We'll get an email notification or something.
I'm either going to tell you were right and we'll have a laugh, or you're wrong and I'll laugh at you.
Yeah. Either way, we'll have a good time with it. So in that case, let's turn on the afterburners, and we've got a healthy amount of them here. So let's jump in. The Surface Pro is going to be available starting February 9th with its 1080p screen and a stylus. So very interesting. We've pretty much already talked about all the details of what the Surface Pro is going to be. And one other note is that there will be a 64 gigabyte version of the Surface RT that they're releasing as well. So that will be very interesting to see how it does. And I think that is a pretty competent Windows 8 laptop for the most part.
And Windows 8, the promotional pricing will be ending this week. After January 31st, 2013, the minimum upgrade cost will be $120 to upgrade to Windows 8, $200 for Windows 8 Pro.
Yeah, so if you're thinking about it, you better pull the trigger now. In fact, I just pulled the trigger on my desktop and upgraded it to Windows 8, and we're doing the podcast from it right now. I haven't had too many problems from the desktop perspective, and if you're going to do it, you should do it now.
Yeah, it's like $15 or maybe $40 as opposed to $200.
Yeah, if you bought a laptop or something with Windows 7 in some time period recently, then you can get it for $15 after like a rebate. And if you are just upgrading for no reason, then it's $40. So no reason to pay $200 for it. Pay the $40 now. That's the way I look at it. So Microsoft Office 2013 will be available to purchase January 29th. And we've heard so much about this, you almost think it's already in the market, but it's not. So it'll be available tomorrow as of the recording of this podcast. So if you're listening, it's probably available. And it'll be interesting to see how it goes. Office is a big business for Microsoft.
Yeah, and the cool thing is that if you get a subscription-based version of the new Office, which is a new option, which I don't understand, but you can use either Office for Windows or Office for Mac within the same subscription.
Yeah, that's right. You're just purchasing a subscription to the license in that case.
But I'm just waiting for Office for iOS.
That's right. Now, I think,
which I really thought was going to come out at the same time.
I think we're going to see something like that down the line. I'm not sure it's going to happen immediately. We've got Office for Windows RT, albeit not Outlook, although why someone would want to use Outlook on Windows RT is beyond me.
Well, you would know better than me.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Okay, and now Sony is coming out with a new 10-inch tablet. It's going to be the Xperia Tablet Z. It is 10 inches. It supports basically 1080p display, and it is thinner than the iPad mini and lighter by like almost 30% than the full-size iPad.
Wow. Okay. So this thing is lighter than the iPad mini and also larger, 10.1 inches. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, lighter than the iPad mini. No, no, thinner than the iPad mini, lighter and larger than the full-size iPad.
Ah, okay, there we go. That's what I missed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this seems like a pretty interesting... It's got all of the stuff you'd want in a tablet, and this looks pretty darn interesting. So no price yet. They're going to release it sometime in March in Japan, if the rumor is accurate, and so we'll see what happens with that.
Right. Now, AT&T has made another change to their FaceTime policy for iPhones on their network. Remember, they first said that you had to be on their new family share plan with an LTE phone. Then they said, okay, fine, you don't have to have the new plan. You just have to have one of our tiered plans, not the old unlimited plan, but you still have to be on LTE. Then they said, maybe if you have an LTE phone, you can sometimes use FaceTime when you're not on LTE. And now they finally said, you can use FaceTime anywhere on our network. Doesn't matter. But if you're still on the unlimited plan, you're out of luck.
It just seems bizarre. I mean, let us use the data. Why won't they let us use the data plan that the consumers are paying for? I don't understand. And I'm sure I said that when they started restricting it in the first place. But just let us use the data.
Right. I think this is probably about as far as they're going to go. They're not going to offer any more perks for these grandfathered unlimited people.
Well, and the one nice thing about it is that eventually everyone will have the LTE plan and will be able to use it, right?
So because they'll all be forced to give up their old unlimited plan, right?
That's right.
And finally, Apple has released a new version of iOS for all their devices that support the latest iOS 6. There is nothing super special about it. Probably the coolest thing is that you can now buy movie tickets by asking Siri.
That's kind of neat. So they added, do you know what provider they added to Siri with this, or is it their own? Or?
It's Fandango.
It's Fandango. That makes a
lot of
sense.
Yeah, they were already using Fandango for movie times, and now you can buy tickets directly from Siri.
Cool. That seems like a good idea, unless it goes wrong.
All right, so we've got a little bit more to talk about iOS 6.1, but before we do, we're going to have to turn off the afterburners.
Yeah, I think this is interesting to me. The screenshot here, it says, iOS 6.1, this update contains improvements and bug fixes.
They always say that.
99.6 megabytes, wow.
Yeah, they always say improvements and bug fixes. One other thing that they added was LTE support for more worldwide carriers. Because Apple is in the midst of rolling out the rest of their worldwide iPhone 5 launch.
Yeah, that's right. These things we always forget here in the United States that not everybody gets the device launches that we get, particularly from Apple.
Yeah, not right away.
To some extent, with some Android phones, it happens in the opposite direction. But with Apple, we always take for granted that these things are released in the United States first. So,
right.
Yeah, it makes sense they'll be adding that kind of thing for other countries over time.
I think it's nice that we get some stuff before other countries. I mean, we were second fiddle to Japan for a long time. And we still are, especially with certain Sony tablets.
Yeah, that's right. I guess we just talked about one of these things where it's going to go to Japan and not here.
Yeah, and who knows when we'll get it. They haven't even said.
I remember
Apple, at least, if you don't get it right away, they'll tell you when you do get it.
Pre-iPhone smartphones in particular were available somewhere in Asia long before they were available over here.
I think that's still the case with non-iPhone smartphones.
Yeah, with a lot of these Android phones.
Right. Anyway, going back to the new iOS update, the biggest update that they got was actually for Apple TV. And we mentioned this before because we had heard it was coming. Bluetooth keyboard pairing is now supported, which is really great. I have an Apple TV at my house, and it's not currently set up to work with my iTunes account, so I can't pair remotes with it. I can't pair my iPhone remote with it, and so I can't use the keyboard on my phone. So now I can use a real keyboard, and I'm excited because you end up searching for things a lot on Netflix and Hulu.
Yeah, I mean, having a keyboard when you need it really kind of makes a lot of sense. With my Windows Media Center, I'm always in this position where, you know, anytime I need to take out a keyboard, it's horrible, but sometimes it just needs to happen, right? Anytime you're searching for something, it's nice to take out a keyboard. And I think it's just kind of a reality of these things that is hard to overcome. And I haven't seen a perfect solution. I mean, we've seen these kind of remotes that have a keyboard on the back, and that's a little hacky. And the Boxy Box did that kind of thing as well. And nobody's quite solved that yet. And, you know, I don't want to pass my phone around to people if there's other people in the room to use that as a remote. We don't have a good solution for this yet. And I feel like this is kind of nice to see happen as a stopgap.
True, yeah. Another thing that the Apple TV is getting is better iTunes integration support. So it supports iTunes in the cloud. And if you have iTunes playing music on your computer through the Apple TV, you can now use your Apple remote to add songs into the playlist on your computer.
That's pretty cool. Does it work the other way around?
Oh, I mean, it's always worked the other way around. So I've got my laptop, right? I have iTunes open. I'm playing music. I'm sending it to the Apple TV. I could always go back to the laptop and rearrange my playlist however I wanted. But now I can edit the playlist on my laptop from the Apple TV while it's playing on the Apple TV.
Cool. That's pretty nice.
What it doesn't have, though, is any better support for iTunes Match. It does have iTunes Match support, but all of these new features don't support iTunes Match, which is pretty disappointing to me.
Yeah, it's a little interesting, isn't it? So they're supporting the local playing of all of this music, but not their cloud offerings.
Yeah, I think it's just something they haven't gotten to yet, which probably is fine. It's really disappointing to see Apple not having full ecosystem integration. It's kind of the thing that they're supposed to do the best. Yeah, and so when there is a notably absent feature, it's disappointing.
It's funny because I feel like they've always been bad at the web. I think they've always been good at designing their devices and having services that run locally. I mean, for what it's worth, I really dislike iTunes and I'd like to never see it again. But for what it's worth, I mean, it did something in a way that people wanted and was really good at it at first. And it did so locally. And then you see them roll out their mail accounts and all that kind of stuff, and they weren't too great. And you see them trying to get into the cloud, and they really, I guess they don't have experience with that.
Mm.
So it'll happen over time. I mean, we're going to see it just happen.
Right.
And they didn't have experience,
but now they're getting experience.
Yeah, that's right. Now they do, right? Now they're starting to get there. So I feel like this is also why it's like this, is that this is kind of what they're good at and they can do this kind of thing quickly.
Right. So hopefully they will be more feature complete. But the addition of all these features, especially the Bluetooth keyboard pairing, is very welcome to pretty much any Apple TV owner.
Definitely so. All right. So I guess we'll move into a couple of my stories here. Since I broke my HTC Trophy, the Windows Phone 7 device that I had to get myself on eBay and get a replacement for it, and I went for the HTC 8X, and I'm really liking it so far. This device has been fantastic. The Trophy was always kind of slow. You know, I put up with it because I knew it was kind of an old device, but this is a really current gen. It's Windows Phone 8. All the little user interface tweaks that they have applied are pretty nice.
In terms of your phone, you've essentially just like jumped forward 2 years into the future.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. I mean, I went from, what did I use before that? A Droid. Is that right? I think that's right. So I was using a Droid and then I was using the Trophy. I mean, that's a quantum leap.
Right.
And this is another quantum leap, because it's actually a current phone. I think this is the first actually current phone I've had in a long time.
Welcome to the present.
Welcome to the present, a.k.a.
the future. Waving at you from the future, just in case that wasn't clear.
Yeah, so as far as the phone goes, it's definitely speedy compared to that old device, and all of the Windows Phone 7 features are there, and Windows Phone 8 doesn't have a whole lot of stuff that is terribly exciting. It's kind of more of the same. They've just added a ton of polish. It's the last, 100 meters or whatever it is. And it's really all of the things that I had gripes with in Windows Phone 7 are kind of fixed in Windows Phone 8.
Well, that's pretty nice.
Yeah. So also one thing that kind of struck me as odd, and maybe this is a little small to talk about, but you remember how everyone said that they're removing the gutter on the right-hand side? Do you remember this?
The black bar. I was just wasted space.
Right. It bothered people that their screen real estate was not taken up by some kind of information. And that always struck me as a little specious. But in Windows Phone 8, it's gone, right?
Right.
It's funny because it's not actually gone. It's just a lot smaller.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. 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 So it's stuff like that. It's the little tiny things like that. So the idea of, hey, there's something over there to the right, being the function of the black bar, it's still actually there. They just made it not ridiculous.
Sure.
And that's kind of the theme of Windows Phone 8 for me, is the things that were a little ridiculous, they took them and polished them up. So
they made it not ridiculous.
Yeah, that show title right there, Windows Phone 8. It's Windows Phone 7, but not ridiculous. I like that.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you like it.
Yeah, so it's really nice. It's got all the things that I want.
Would you recommend Windows Phone 8? Would you recommend the HTC 8X?
I would. It's speedy. It's what you'd expect. It's got a front-facing camera that Windows Phone 7 never had.
What about for someone who has no idea what to expect?
Well, then they'll just like it. They won't know what it was like in the past. Yes.
So someone who didn't have a phone that was 3 years old, they'll like it anyway?
Yeah, they'll just like it.
Okay. But they won't like it as much as you because they didn't know how terrible things were.
Well, no, they'll probably like it as much as me. They just won't appreciate it as much as me.
Well, that will always be true of most things Windows.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. So, yeah, this is a really nice device, and I'm really enjoying using it. So Windows Phone 8 is really pretty nice. And, I was a Windows Phone 7 fan, so I already know how it works, and I think that helps a lot moving to this. But it's been a very nice device.
Good. Well, I'm glad. Any other new technology over there in Casa Barnes?
Yeah, that's right. I mentioned this earlier, and I thought I should mention in the end user stories here that I upgraded my desktop to Windows 8 before the pricing got increased, or rather before the sale went away. So I went ahead and took the plunge and put my desktop on Windows 8. I'm also using Windows 8 at work, which is probably pretty unique. I wonder if you are in the audience and you're listening right now and you are using Windows 8, tweet at me, at the end user, and I'd be very curious to see if we get any tweets.
Well, let's say we ask them to tweet if they're using Windows 8 at home and at work and on their laptop and on their phone and on a Surface.
Yeah, I guess that is.
How many tweets do you think we'll get? Because that's what you're doing.
I don't think we'd get very many. I do have Windows Home Server 2011, which is based on Windows 7, so I still got that.
Ah.
And my media center is going to remain Windows 7.
All right. Well, I can one-up you. Not yet, but by the end of the year, I will. Do you want to hear what it is?
What are you planning on here?
By the end of the year, all of my devices will be Retina.
Ooh, I like that. I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've really got to, maybe I got to get on these Korean monitors you told us about 2 weeks ago. Those things seem fantastic. I got to upgrade these monitors. They're getting ridiculous.
They do, but those are not Retina. You need the same resolution at one quarter of the size for it to be Retina.
Yeah, so anyway, I've got a little bit of a story here, and then we can move on from my Windows 8 upgrading activities. This was a clean install, so I backed up all of my information using Windows Easy Transfer and then wiped the hard drive and installed Windows 8 clean, and I'm going to migrate my data back over time. And It's not really necessary to do that with Windows 8. It's got a pretty seamless upgrade process, but it just always makes me feel better.
Cool.
So now we went to do the podcast, and I figure, oh, well, this is Windows 8. I'll use the Metro version or the Windows Store version of Skype.
The right? Modern version.
Right, the modern UI version, the Moose version, if you will. And it turns out, you know, that version works fine, but there's no volume slider, which is something that we rely upon for the podcast to control the volume. So I really can't use it. And they have a new version called Skype for Windows Desktop that you can get. And it is the same old Skype that you're used to. And so we still can do the podcast, of course, but I'm a little disappointed that the Windows Store version of Skype did not actually work. At least
I guess
our purposes.
It's this idea of they take the desktop and they strip it down to its bare components, and then you have to build it back up from there.
Yeah,
so they just
true.
Haven't gotten to volume yet.
Yeah, it's true. They haven't gotten to that feature yet.
It is really disappointing, isn't it? Because Microsoft owns Skype, so you think they should get it right the first time.
Yeah, and to be clear about this, Skype in the Windows Store version will work for your typical consumer application. You know, most people aren't going out there and broadcasting live on Skype. You know, this isn't something that most people do. So I understand, you know, some of that. And it's simpler and you don't have to worry about adjusting the volume. But it's something that we needed for the podcast. And I guess they do have the desktop version available. So as the Windows 8 mantra for desktop goes, that's what the desktop is for, dummy, right?
Right.
That's why it's still there, because we need it.
You do.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Us power users still need it. And I expect that to change a little bit over time, but it's not there yet, right?
Right.
So anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting that we cannot use the new Skype. And I'm looking forward to a day when we can.
I'm looking forward to like a year after that day when whatever new features you get come to Mac.
That's right. Yeah, the Mac Skype client is no fun.
No, it's fine. It's just it's always a year or so behind on the features that Windows gets.
Yeah, in fact, it's almost like iTunes on the PC, isn't it?
No, iTunes always gets the same new features the same day release as iTunes on the Mac.
Right, but
it just doesn't work quite as well.
Yeah, right. It just doesn't quite function as well. It has more features.
No, it doesn't. It has the same amount of features. Stop saying that.
No, I mean those bugs that are secretly features. There's more of those.
Ah, well, then you should be grateful, right?
Yeah, I suppose we should. I'm not grateful. At least not
okay,
for
so
iTunes.
Okay, so I want to talk for a little bit about this new service. Netflix and YouTube are teaming up to form a new wireless video transmission platform called Dial. Now, I talk about this because in past episodes of the show, Chris and I have always had this back and forth about AirPlay versus DLNA. That's the open source media streaming.
I don't think
it's not open source?
No, it's a standard that you can implement.
Okay.
And I think you may implement it in an open source fashion, but it itself, to call it open source is a little misleading. But
I see. It's my mistake.
It is a standard, right?
Right. It's a standard. It's a more open standard than AirPlay.
Yes, absolutely. That.
All right.
Certainly.
So, but Netflix and YouTube, along with partners Samsung, Sony, Hulu, BBC, and others, have decided that it was not sufficient. It was not a next generation protocol for streaming video and music. And so they've gotten together to create this new platform called Dial. And they're trying to be another more open alternative to AirPlay.
So it seems like to me that this seems a little more cloudy. Like this service, using Dial, encourages you to have an app that acts as a second screen, but doesn't necessarily throw the content around locally quite like AirPlay does.
Yeah.
And they've got UPnP multicast and all that kind of stuff, but it seems like to me there's just kind of another slant to this that is different than the idea of AirPlay. I mean, these things can coexist, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're going to kind of exist in different world tracks. You know, one is just going to be Apple stuff, and the other one is going to be Netflix, YouTube, Samsung, Sony, Hulu, BBC. But I don't want to get into the specifics of it, the technologies of it, how it's going to work, because we don't really know yet. My main question is, do we need this? Like, is this going to be measurably better than DLNA?
Yeah, I wonder. The details are pretty sparse on the actual technical implementation of this. And that's really what I want to see is how are they doing what they're doing? I mean, for all I know, they could be using DLNA. And this is just kind of a wrapper on top of it. You know, for all I know, that could possibly be true.
True. But, I hadn't even thought of that.
With just the way they're talking about this, it seems like a more user-friendly option, I guess. So
it's hard to get more user-friendly than AirPlay.
Well, no, what I mean by that is, so DLNA is a way by which people can play media on other devices, right?
Mm-hmm.
This seems like, to me, the user interface on top of that, almost. Like, this is the thing that developers are going to take and implement it in an easy way, no matter what it's using underneath. And for all we, you know, who cares what it's using underneath? But it seems like a step forward from DLNA. DLNA being something like HTTP. Does that kind of make sense?
Sure. Okay. It might be that. And that would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be very interesting because that would just make it easier. It's one more level of abstraction away, and that makes it easier for developers to implement things. So, I think that's very interesting. And we'll have to see if something happens with this.
Right, we will. So we will keep on top of it for you. We will report back if anything does happen. And that was all that I wanted to say about Dial. And so we can move on to our next story.
Cool. So this next story is something I've been thinking about for a while, and it seems very interesting, although this particular device is not something that I think is terribly interesting. But the idea is very interesting, and that is that HTC has announced a remote for your smartphone. So this device is a little phone that has a number pad on it, and you can make calls from it. So you can pair it with your phone, particularly the 5-inch HTC Butterfly smartphone, and use this remote as a dumb phone. And I think there's something to that. Now, I'm not sure if having this candy bar dumb phone makes sense, but I think there's something to this kind of remote to your smartphone that's more easily accessible thing.
Sure, yeah, the Pebble wristwatch.
Yeah, the Pebble wristwatch and things like that. I think we're going to see something interesting happen there. And now, wouldn't this be cool with a tablet? So you have an LTE tablet and then this kind of remote phone that you actually put in your pocket. You put your tablet in your bag and this just kind of remotes home to it.
I do kind of like that idea. And furthermore, this HTC Mini, it looks pretty awesome. I'm not crazy about the number dial pad. I don't know who's going to be using that. But I want to sort of understand how it works. Now, it's designed to work specifically with the HTC Butterfly smartphone.
Right.
And that's got a 5-inch screen. So it's not necessarily going to be able to go anywhere. Oh, and this is the Chinese version of the HTC Butterfly.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the
Droid DNA.
This is not something you're going to see in the United States, or for that matter, anywhere else outside of China, it seems. Unless it's terribly successful, I bet you maybe they would consider it. But it's not something you're going to see. It's not likely to be something you're going to see in your market as you're listening to this English podcast.
Yeah, they haven't even announced whether it will work on the international versions of the Droid DNA. But I want to understand how this thing is supposed to work. So it's got NFC and Bluetooth, right? Mm-hmm. You sync it with your phone using NFC. So you touch it, you touch the phone and the Mini together.
I think the thing that would be more accurate to say is that you touch it to your phone with NFC and it pairs your Bluetooth to actually do things.
Right. Okay. But the Mini is not a phone. So it's a Bluetooth handset for your phone.
Right. That's a good way of saying it. It is a Bluetooth handset, not a Bluetooth headset, right?
Right.
So I think there's some promise here. And I don't think it's this thing, but couldn't you see like some kind of minimal implementation of this same thing that is something like the Pebble, but you can answer calls to your actual Bluetooth headset with, or you could just kind of read some tweets or something like that? Or there's a lot of possibilities flying around here.
I think as a companion to a tablet, if you could get this thing down to the size of a stylus, then you've really got something.
Yeah, all right. I could see that.
I mean, you know, not a little tiny slip inside the case stylus, you know, like a full pen size stylus.
Like a nice
fountain pen, but it's a stylus and it's also a handset.
The Zoolander phone? Cool.
No, not the Zoolander phone. That's way too small.
All right. Well, that's just something that captured my imagination, and obviously it captured yours as well. So I don't know. I'd like to see more of this kind of thing happening. We'll see more with the Pebble Watch and a lot of this kind of stuff coming out. This is going to be a theme of the future. Would you not agree, Mr. Prime?
Well, the future is the theme of the future. I don't know if you knew that, Chris, but it is. this is like a footnote?
Yeah, maybe a footnote.
But it could be a long footnote. It could be one of those David Foster Wallace style footnotes.
Yeah, a footnote that lasts for pages.
Mm-hmm. Chapters, even. All right, so it does look really cool. I have no idea what it does, and I really have no idea why it needs a number pad. But it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about this kind of stuff. So let's move on to our my last story of the end user stories, although you've got one for us. I guess that's the green tech story that you've got, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Okay, so our last the end user story is there has been a hubbub around Java, and we've largely ignored it because we're not a security podcast, and it's not something we're terribly interested in talking about. Java security vulnerabilities is not that interesting to the typical end user, right?
Right.
I'm sorry, did you fall asleep?
Only for a second.
Only for a second. So I just wanted to give it a quick mention because it is kind of significant that Java has had like three security holes that have been patched and hacked, and Oracle is in trouble with Java. And you don't really need to know about all that, but what you do need to know is that if you do have Java installed in your system, you should at very least disable the applets that run in your browser. And there's a way to do that. We've got a link in the show notes. And the security rule is if you don't need it, uninstall it. If you do need it, at least disable its ability to run in the browser. So go ahead and go to our show notes and click on the link if you're using Java, or if you have some kind of banking application or something like that that uses Java, then at least disable it in the browser.
Awesome. Mine is disabled, so.
Yeah, and it's nice. Chrome has an implementation where they just ask you first, which has not been true of browsers in the past. They say, Java's about to run. You sure you want to do that? And, you know, if it's your bank, of course, yeah, I want to use Java. Right, I get it. So that kind of makes sense. But as it is, as of recently, that's probably what you should be doing. And by the way, if you're really security conscious, the same is true of JavaScript. JavaScript is pretty powerful, although not anywhere near as powerful as Java. But if you don't need it, get rid of it. Now that said, I browse with JavaScript on. That seems reasonable to me. But Java's a little too powerful for its own good to run inside of the browser context as it does. So if you don't need it, get rid of it.
Okay, great. If you don't need it, get rid of it. Otherwise, turn off applets.
That's right. And I guess the same mantra is true with conserving energy and green technology, isn't it?
The same is true. Now, my green tech story of the week is unfortunately about an SUV. But I've got good news. It's a hybrid SUV. Well, that's still not very green. It's a hybrid diesel SUV. Well, that's getting greener. Well, what if you put biodiesel in the hybrid diesel SUV? Now you're going somewhere. So at the North American International Auto Show, Volkswagen introduced the first hybrid diesel car that will be available in the U.S. market. Europe has had one made by Peugeot for 2 or 3 years, and this is basically the second mass production hybrid diesel vehicle, which I think is great because on pretty much any modern diesel car, you can run biodiesel on it, and then you're immediately carbon neutral, you know, if you can find a source of biodiesel. But if you can't, you can always just switch back to regular diesel, and then if you find more biodiesel, you can fill it up with diesel, and they can mix in the same tank. Did you know that, Chris?
Yeah, that's kind of weird. I mean, coming from the background of knowing that you should not do that with gasoline, it's a little weird to do that. But this is not gasoline, so we shouldn't think about it that way, right?
Right, yeah. Diesel fuel is, diesel engines are remarkable things. But if you're just running a regular diesel engine with regular diesel fuel, it runs really well, but it's incredibly dirty. If you make it a hybrid and switch that to biodiesel, now you're carbon neutral and your car smells like French fries.
That's right. The exhaust smells slightly of French fries, right?
Well, it depends on the input liquid, and for the most part, no, but a little bit.
Yeah, so that seems pretty cool. So let's move on from our green tech story of the week and move on to our tip of the week, which is from you, as usual.
Yes, the tip of the week this week is a website that I found called WikiCancel. And it is an open source guide to figuring out how to cancel your account to anything.
So that's cool. So it's this just kind of database of how to cancel stuff?
Right. That if you figure out how to cancel one of your online services, you can just add it to the list.
Yeah, that's really cool. Because a lot of times it can be a little complicated to figure out how to cancel that thing or unsubscribe to something. And if you could just know to go to WikiCancel, that seems pretty neat.
Yeah, that's it. WikiCancel.
So we were talking...
That's the tip.
We were talking before the show, and I looked at this, and I walked away immediately, and I just kind of got a glance of it. And I read it as, Wiki Chanel is a collection of guides to clothing. That's not what it is.
No, it says WikiCancel is a collection of guides to closing all your accounts.
Yeah. So I think Taylor and I are going to start a business, and we're going to make Wiki Chanel, though.
Yes, we are. First step, buy a bunch of Chanel, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. Well, no. It's a open source database of Chanel products is how I was envisioning this.
And how are we gonna find the Chanel products?
Well, I was just wondering why in the world you would include this in the show notes.
Next week, Chris. Next week.
Yeah, always another week. All right, so I've got an app pick for us. I wrote an article over at thedigitalmediazone.com about Nokia Drive Plus, which is available now in beta for Windows Phone 8. And it is a fantastic application and is something that just was not available for Windows Phone before. It was exclusive to Nokia, and there was really no other application like it. It's a really fantastic navigation app. And, you know, I don't drive that much, so I'm not sure how qualified I am to say this, but it seems like the best of the lot to me, and I think it puts it on par, if not better, than Android's navigation application. So if you're a Windows Phone user, go have a look at that.
What if we're not Windows Phone users?
Well, then you can use Google Navigation on Android or Apple Maps.
Or Google on iOS.
Yeah, that's more accurate, I think.
All right. Well, anything else about Nokia Drive?
No, it's cool. Go have a look.
All right.
I don't want to whine on about Windows Phone so much that most people don't use. So just go have a look if you are a Windows Phone user. It is certainly worth a download, and it's free.
All right. Excellent.
So with that, let's get into our kicker. And you've got a good one for us. This is cool.
Yeah. So, some scientists have been experimenting with data density and how to get data into the smallest, lightest possible form. And some of them struck upon the idea of coding digital data into actual DNA. It works out pretty well because you've got four different bases in any DNA molecule, and they're naturally matched up in pairs. So any telomerase pair can naturally represent one byte. Now, the scientists have figured out a way to do this, finally, and managed to program an entire MP3 into DNA.
Cool. So have they figured it out, or have they done it yet?
They've figured it out. I don't know if they've actually done it. Even if they did do it, I don't think we have a way of reading it yet.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, but they've figured out how to do it. So we can now create data storage with a storage density of 2.2 petabytes per gram.
Whoa.
Or so what, 2.2 terabytes per milligram?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. So it turns out that we've been trying to do this forever with hard drives and coming up with insane inventions to encode data. And it turns out that evolution has already figured this out for us. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, it's just DNA is a very dense form of data transfer.
Yeah, definitely. I wonder what kind of...
Much more dense than anything that we've made mechanically.
I wonder what kind of read speeds you could get out of some DNA hard drive or something. Or at least, we should say, DNA-like hard drive.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is DNA, but the thing is, when you synthesize DNA, there are errors that can happen every time the DNA copies itself. And DNA isn't designed to be read by machines. It just copies itself.
Right. So they need to figure out how to adapt the ideas of DNA into a medium that makes sense for us to read it mechanically.
We can read it mechanically. It would just take a very long time and would be prone to errors.
No, I mean,
so we can build that process up. This will never be, or I don't know, at least in our lifetimes, I don't think this will be, you know, what your computer's hard drive is made out of. But it could be very good for something where you need to store information for a very long time in a very light form factor.
Yeah, so you could maybe backups or something. You want to be information dense, and you're not terribly sensitive to how long it takes to get the data back.
Right. So interstellar probes, perhaps.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that is just fascinating. I can't wait to read more about this.
Well, you can if you go to Ars Technica and follow the link in our show notes.
Yeah. And
Chris, you already have that link, so you don't need to do that.
I will be posting a video of this on Vine.
of what exactly?
These are both things that we will likely not talk about in 3 months. So I figured I would post a video of this process onto Vine.
All right. Sweet.
Oh, I had to get one last dig in there, I suppose.
Do you want to borrow my iPhone to do it?
Yeah, I guess I'd have to fire up an iPhone emulator or something.
Sorry, I don't like passing my phone around, Chris.
Yeah, I understand. It's okay. I'm perfectly fine. All right, well, that'll do it for this week. Taylor, if somebody were to try to tweet at you, how would they do so?
I don't know. I speak canary. I don't speak pigeon. I don't speak crow. Parrot? Parrot is good.
How about raven?
Raven. I speak old raven, but not standardized raven, so that could be a problem. Oh, I speak parakeet, so parakeet. Yeah, that would be my first choice.
So
So in parakeet, you can tweet me at TaylorPhone.
Yeah, there you go. By what medium in should parakeet. They speak at you in parakeet? Is at TaylorPhone. Good stuff.
Right.
So if you wanted to get at me, I am at Chris Hellbarn. So give us a tweet and what did we tell people to tweet at us earlier? If you're using Windows 8 at work, give us a tweet at the end user so that we can document this occasion.
Awesome.
All right, so that'll do it for this week, and thank you everyone for listening to the show, and of course you can find more information, including the show notes, at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. Well, DMZ has a handful of other podcasts, so you can have a listen to Entertainment 2.0, Seen in HD, and the Movie Podcast. You can send us some feedback through email at theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or, like I said, follow us on Twitter. We are at @theenduser. Join us live in the chat room as we record the show live every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Moore.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.